Yeah, check it, I'll check it.
That's me pulling over. And I look at you, deadpan serious, and I go, you go out there and you get that calculator. You go out there.
No, I...
And you get that calculator.
I don't want it. I'm sick of this. I don't want to do math no more.
You got to do math. You got to make something of yourself.
All right. I'll get it. I'll get the calculator.
And then, and then drive off.
Hello and welcome to episode 28 of the Dan and Joe Film Show. Hope you're doing well wherever you're listening to today, and hope you're keeping safe in this mad, mad year that we have called 2020. As always, I'm joined by my gorgeous partner in crime. He's the close to my Glenn. He's the Adams to my Amy. It's the one and only Joe Richards.
Oh, thank you. How are you, young man? Although... should I call you young man? Because it was your birthday yesterday. So you're a whole year older since the last time we did the show. How does that feel?
It feels great. To be 21 is just such a thrill for me.
Oh,
no.
If only.
If only. Well, you know what? I mean, the age I am now was a very recent memory for you, I'm sure. Once you reach like the decade I'm in, it's strange because you do say, oh gosh, I can't believe how old I'm getting. And then somebody will go, it's downhill from here. Like, you know, enjoy it while you can, because actually you're kind of in the somewhat youth of the life. But actually, it's quite a nice age. It's weird. Like, I feel like certain ages just don't seem right, you know? Like, for me, 22 was nice. 23 was quite nice. 24, I didn't really like too much. It was just not a number I was feeling too much. But I think, you know, the year, you know, the age I am now, it feels pretty good. It's kind of hasn't hit me yet, maybe. Give it a month and maybe I'll be sobbing on my bed.
You're absolutely fine. Yeah. It's not even that bad. Like, you know, it's not even that bad. And you're absolutely right. Age is all about, you know, perspective, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I am 33 in February. I do not feel 33 in, you know, nearly 33. I feel 25, to be honest. You know, my grey hair may say differently, but I feel 25. So yeah, it's all about perspective, isn't it? And you know, you are still very, very young. You've got the world at your feet. You are absolutely fine. And what is also great is you have the honor of sharing your 25th birthday with a historical moment, an historical day.
Yes,
in that it was the first day of the COVID vaccinations as well.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it's Nicki Minaj's birthday as well, because I was going to say definitely. Yes, you are right, Joe. I mean, you really should be a newsreader, but yes, it was a historic day, wasn't it, on the 8th of December, because some of the first patients had their vaccine, which was lovely. And it's such a breath of fresh air, isn't it, this year? I feel like that all the scientists working on the vaccine have just done so well to find a vaccine in relatively a short space of time, because, you know, scientists were kind of predicting this was going to go on for years. Like, you know, normally it does take a long time, but they managed to crack the code, and we are the first country, I believe, in the world which has a vaccine distributed. So take that, America.
So very exciting times. And did you have a nice day on your birthday? I know you weren't vaccinated, unfortunately. You couldn't have had that for your present, but did you have a nice day?
I should have ordered that at the restaurant, shouldn't I? Forget the alcohol, pass me that vaccine, that'll do the trick. Yeah, it was lovely. It was lovely. The better half and I, we had a lovely meal at a lovely Mexican place, which are renowned for their cocktails. That was a bit disappointing. You know, I would have liked to have had 2-for-1 cocktails. Maybe a moo-moo, maybe a sex on the beach. Who knows where the night would take me. But yes, it was lovely. I was treated so. I was spoilt last night. And yeah, it was a really, really nice day on the whole. And it was strange enough, it was nicer than last year. I was like, we were in a pandemic. But you're right, Joe. You are so right about ages, because it is down to perception. It is down to context. And I always say, you know, there is a slight age difference between us, but genuinely, I say to people, it's like we're the same age.
Yeah.
And I do believe that. So, yeah.
You know,
there we are.
I'm, what can I say? I'm very immature for a 33
no!
year old.
Not at all.
But yeah, I'm glad you had a nice day. And I was slightly disappointed that obviously with restrictions and things like that, that, you know, I couldn't be there to celebrate it with you. But I'm glad you had a lovely, lovely time. And, you know, your birthday next year, I'm sure we'll make up for, you know, this year massively with many, many, many cocktails, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you so much, Joe. How have you been? Obviously, we've got a lot to talk about today. Some big film news, which we're going to get to in a bit, which has kind of, I don't know, made me feel a little bit anxious. But how have you been in yourself?
Yeah, I've been great, actually. I'm doing a three-week running course, which we were talking about before we started recording. So yeah, I bought a Fitbit a few months ago, the ongoing saga of the Fitbit, and I joined a three-week training program with the Fitbit, running for beginners, because back in the day when I was super, you know, when I was the man, back in the man days.
How long ago was that?
That was like 2-3 years ago when I was super, super trim, you know, single man on the scene, you know, Dan.
Hot stuff.
You know, gas in the tank, money in the bank. And back in those days, I could run for however long I wanted, basically, on like a treadmill. I could literally run for an hour and a half and I'd get a sweat, but I'd be okay. Running on concrete, I've never been able to do. So I've joined this course with Fitbit. And tomorrow, I've built it up for the last 2.5 weeks. And tomorrow is my final week of, I've got a big run tomorrow to kind of complete this course. And I'm feeling great. And all of this is simply because I'm thinking, if I just get the weight off now, I might make it up to the other side of Christmas and not be too huge. You know, I'm just forward thinking. This is, you know, Christmas planning. Here, I'm thinking I can afford, you know, 10 mince pies, you know, on Christmas Day by just doing this running alone. So that's the only reason I'm doing it.
Absolutely. You're thinking ahead. You're thinking of the future, but you're thinking of 2021, baby. You're thinking of that hot body in the summer on the beach, baby. You know, girth in the pants, money in the bank. Anyway. Yes, I'm glad you're good and all the best with the jogging and the running and running on concrete. I mean, it's the same as walking on water. You'll get there eventually. Fine.
There's something happening.
In the next year, Warner Brothers Pictures is bringing you the biggest premieres.
So this is the Suicide Squad.
In theaters and streaming exclusively on HBO Max. The exact same day.
But the what now?
In theaters and streaming on HBO Max beginning December 25th.
And the big news story this week, I would dare say the biggest piece of film news, I think, since COVID started, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And it was announced. I kind of saw it literally half an hour after it was announced. And I was eating my food and I just felt so sick. And I ate my food and I ran upstairs. And my mum said, what are you doing? She said, I've got to tell Joe about this. And I was in a sweat. And I was like, you know what? I should be starting running on concrete because I was in such a sweat. Anyway, so I messaged Joe, and it is the news that obviously, because of so many delays to films, HBO Max, which is owned by Warner Media, not just Warner Brothers, it's all very, very complicated. HBO Max, which is a new streaming service, it's currently in America only, and the figures aren't doing so good for HBO Max. They're about 8 million. Compare that to Disney Plus, which, say, has 73 million. So HBO Max is a small fish in a big pond at the minute. But they've got a plan for 2021. And what they've decided to do, along with Warner Brothers, is they're going to release the entire 2021 schedule of films, all 17 films released by Warner Brothers. They're going to release it at home on streaming and in theatres simultaneously on the same day. Now, this kind of deal has never been done before. We spoke a couple of months ago about Mulan, about the fact that that went straight to Disney Plus, and we thought that was like heartbreaking for cinemas. This is going to be very interesting, I think. We don't know how this is going to go. But Joe, how did you respond to the news? How did you feel at the time?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it, because I was out for my better half's mother's 60th birthday at the time. We were having a meal. I got your messages through and I was shook. I was properly shook. And like, I immediately went, I was like, this can't be true. This can't be real. So I like went on Twitter, and like, it was just an implosion on Twitter of all the, you know, film fans and stuff like that just being shocked at this decision by Warner Brothers to release their 2021 slate. I mean, that trailer that you shared with me, I mean, I could not believe it. The 2021 slate for Warner Brothers, for those people who aren't aware, includes, to name but a few, The Suicide Squad, James Gunn's version of The Suicide Squad. But more than that, it includes Denis Villeneuve's Dune, which is like a huge, like, visual, like, masterpiece. Like, you've got to see it on the big screen. It includes that, and includes The Matrix 4. I mean, all these films, we're not talking small independent films. They are there as well, but they are some massive, massive movies which are going to be released in cinemas and on HBO Max simultaneously. I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. And strangely, I can't get over the fact that a lot of people seem to think that's the future of cinema. And I know you feel exactly the same way as I do, but I feel like me and you, Dan, have sort of become the minority. And I've seen a lot of people who are like, this is the future, like, you know, Disney Plus and, you know, all these other production companies, Disney and Universal and things like that. They're going to have to adapt. They're going to have to jump on the wagon. And I can't believe that. I can't believe we're in a position now where a lot of big film critics think that this is the answer. This is the way forward. I personally think this is the biggest kick to, you know, cinema has had. Cinema is down anyway. It's hanging on for dear life. And this has just kind of been the knife in the back, as far as I'm concerned. Away from cinemas, Christopher Nolan has spoken out about it, because obviously Tenet was supposed to be the film to save cinema. He's spoken out about it, and he said a lot of filmmakers went to bed the night before thinking they worked for the best film company in the world, and they woke up the next morning to find out they were working for the worst streaming service in the world. And I think that's a point. I think we often forget that these filmmakers, John Chu, for example, who's made a film In the Heights, he directed Crazy Rich Asians a couple of years ago. And at the time of Crazy Rich Asians was due out, he was approached by Netflix to make Crazy Rich Asians for them. He said no, he wants it on a big screen, he wants it in cinemas. He decided not to go for Netflix. He has no choice in the matter now. He's made this film with Lin-Manuel Miranda for cinemas, and he has no say in the fact that it's going to be on streaming and potentially pirated straight away, because, you know, we don't know whether or not this is going to affect us in the UK. As you said, HBO Max isn't available in the UK yet. But, you know, it could be a case that they keep the global release and we see it in cinemas. But even then, you're still going to have those films, as soon as they hit HBO Max, they're going to be pirated. They're going to be online for anybody to watch. And even if you live in the UK and you've got that ability to go to see it in the cinema, you've still got it at home to watch. So it's still going to impact us regardless of whether or not it's released in cinemas here, you know, as just strictly cinemas only. So I think it's really worrying, and I do feel bad for all those people who, you know, work in cinemas and work in the industry and have made these films for the biggest audience possible to be seen as a shared experience, and now they're not going to get a chance to do that. So yeah, I think it's disgusting, to be honest, and I feel like we're in the minority on this. But what do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I was the same as you. I was just so shocked. I feel like to jump the gun and presume that we're going to have another year like this year is ludicrous. This isn't one film. This isn't a month of films. This is a whole year of releases. And you're right. And these are huge films. The Matrix 4, the new Space Jam movie, the Suicide Squad, like you said, massive blockbuster films. And I think a lot of people have said, well, they're stuck in a really tight position, you know. They're trying to meet the demands of both people who want to go to the theatres and people who want to go at home. And for that, I say, bah, humbug. They are not doing that at all. They are, you know, in the statement, I couldn't believe what they said. They were like, you know, we are trying our best to support cinema and promote cinema. But at the same time, we realise that people are just not safe. These people who are still not safe at this point, they ain't never going to be safe. We're going to be 5 years down the road. They're going to be like, well, I feel a little bit unsafe to go. So I'm going to... There are genuine people this year who have sat on their chair and fear-mongered everybody else. If you dare go out and try and have a sense of normality, they're going, oh, you're unsafe, you are. I'm staying in my own home and watching it. Fair enough. You want to stay in your own home, go watch whatever Netflix has got on this week. If you want a real film like Dune, like Suicide Squad, that deserved to be seen on the big screen, made by filmmakers that want their film on the big screen, it should be exclusively on the big screen. We should not be having this debate at all. And cinemas are up in arms. They're going to fight this. I hope they win. But it does feel like this. We are just in the minority, like you said, but this is a losing battle for us. But I think we should still fight this because it's not fair at all. They're manipulating everything. They're saying, oh, we're giving you a choice. They're not giving cinemas a choice. Cinemas have never had a choice from day one. They can't help COVID happening. I just feel like, you know, the carpet's been pulled beneath them. And I feel like they're in a really tricky position. What we can hope for is that other distributors don't do the same. But I think that's unlikely. I think Disney Plus now, they've got a massive investors meeting coming up.
Yeah, I think tomorrow,
Tomorrow, and I think it's just going to be even worse. I think they could potentially put everything on Disney Plus and not even give an option to theatres. But I just want to note a couple of positive things about this, because I think people read the headlines and they go, theatres, blah, blah, blah. Here's what I'll say, and this kind of helped me a little bit with dealing with this. So firstly, like Joe said, only in the US at the minute. Now, apparently they have plans to bring HBO Max to Europe, but this won't happen apparently until summer next year. So at least we have a good 6-7 months where these films will be played in cinemas in the UK and across the world, really. Only America is the only place that's going to be put into. Secondly, they're only going to be put on HBO Max for 30 days. After 30 days, they are taken off the HBO Max and then they are continued in theatres. And they will not go back to HBO Max at all until months later, until they actually have to do PVOD. So really, you have a month to watch these films and then they are gone completely. You are never going to watch them on the streaming service again. And they are played out in theatres, which I think is something at least. Thirdly, last thing, HBO Max is $15 a month in America, right? And for people who already pay $10 for Netflix, $10 for Amazon Prime, $7 for Disney Plus, that $50 is a lot of money, especially because you only really have a release once a month or once every 3 weeks. So you're paying $15 for one film to watch at home. And, you know, yes, ticket prices are kind of similar, maybe $10 or so. But I don't know. I just don't think it's good enough. I think if you had releases 2 or 3 a month, I would say fair enough. But, you know, when you think in the UK, that's £12 a month. Are people really going to pay £12 a month on top of Netflix, which, can I just say, provide content every week? You know, they are very good that way. Quality wise it's iffy, but you know, they do provide content. And Prime, Disney Plus again, are people going to pay that money? I just don't know. It's interesting. It can be interesting to see what happens, but
definitely. And I think that's going to be the key thing as well, is definitely what happens next. I read an article from Robbie Collin in The Telegraph, and he said, basically, we are kidding ourselves if we think that Warner Brothers have said, you know, oh, it's only going to be 2021, you know. Robbie Collin has said, no, I think we're fooling ourselves. Once the genie's out of the bottle, it's difficult to put it back in. And I think once people are, you know, they've got a full 12 months to get used to having those releases there for them when they wake up on a Friday on their television, it's going to be very hard to break that habit. The only thing I will say is I hope that it fails. I really do. And I know that sounds bad, but I hope it fails. And I hope people go out in their droves and prove that cinema is still the preferred option. And obviously, like you said yourself, you know, this isn't set in stone still. I mean, they're still planning on it, but you never know. I mean, Legendary, you know, all these other production companies who've worked side by side with Warner Brothers, they had no say in it. They were notified 30 minutes before the announcement was made. And Legendary, who've worked on Kong versus Godzilla, again, giant monsters, you want to see them fighting on a giant screen, you know, they had no choice in the matter. So it'd be interesting. Apparently, they're going to file some lawsuits against Warner Brothers, breaching contract and things like that. So we'll see what happens. Fingers crossed, cinema will prevail. As you said, things are getting better. The vaccines are coming out. And hopefully this time next year, we'll be talking about cinema releases and cinema will be alive and well and better than ever.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it will. And I think HBO Max need to boost their subscribers to, in order for this to work. I don't think so. You're at 8 million, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's not a good figure. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens next year, you know? So here we are. And moving on now to some reviews. And funny enough, all these films are streaming. because obviously here where we are, cinemas are closed. The first film we're going to talk about is David Fincher's Mank, which I have not seen, starring our good friend, Gary Oldman, a guy you love so much.
Gary Oldman, yeah. Gary Oldman is a strange one, mind, isn't he? Because he does that classic thing of doing like an awards heavy kind of film and then doing something completely tosh afterwards, like something completely rubbish. Here, again, he's kind of hoping for that Oscar buzz. He's hoping for another one of those golden statues, quite clearly, performing in David Fincher's Mank. He plays Herman Mankiewicz, who is a 1930s Hollywood screenwriter, true story, and he's basically responsible for writing Citizen Kane, which is often considered one of the greatest films ever made. And I must say, I do buy into that. I don't think it's a hype. I do think it is a fantastic film, not just from what it managed to achieve technically and how it influenced films to come for years and years and years, but the script itself is absolutely fantastic. So I was really excited to watch Mank and hear all about the kind of unknown, controversial story about the creation of Citizen Kane, because obviously Orson Welles is often kind of credited for, you know, the kind of his masterpiece, and you know, it's Orson Welles' film, and he was the most kind of heavily involved in it. And this says, well, no, you know, it's Herman Mankiewicz, and we get to see, you know, some of the people he meets through the film, which sort of influenced the story. Here's a clip.
Ben, why don't you start?
Well, this was tough, David. In the beginning, we couldn't agree on an approach.
Really? And why was that?
Well, we see a different kind of Paramount picture.
Different how?
Frankenstein. And the Wolfman all rolled into one, only...
I don't make cheap horror pictures. Universal does.
This is different. This is about something.
Okay.
Sydney.
Imagine a mad scientist touring the boonies with a mechanical freak he's fabricated.
Now, what does he mean, fabricated?
Yeah, and displays it to superstitious hayseeds in a giant silk-lined casket for the price of admission.
But every full moon, the monster awakens and raises unholy hell with the villagers. Give it a Eastern European look. Men in leather shorts, gals in tattered peasant blouses.
Let me guess, they think it's the devil.
Villagers always think it's the devil.
And the scientist and his creation are forced to flee during a raging electrical storm.
Flee from outraged peasants.
Who pursue them mit torches.
Overturn their creaky wagon.
And set fire to it. Tell him about the finale, Charlie.
Oh. Well, the rain turns to sleet, puts out the fire, and entombs the monster in solid ice. While nearby, an old priest weeps.
A weeping priest. Thunder, lightning, blood, fire, religion.
All in one film.
And with an unseasonal thaw, a sequel.
I thought you said this
was about something. This was different.
Plus the ominous futility of man playing God.
The Faustian bargain of life everlasting.
And the triumph of the human spirit over the beast incarnate in our far too solid flesh.
That's director proof.
Joe.
B-picture.
It's not for Joe, boys. This is serious. We need your help. We've got to get people into theaters, but how?
Show movies in the streets.
That was a clip from Mank there. And if you couldn't tell from that clip, this film is extremely, extremely wordy. Now, that probably won't surprise people who are fans of David Fincher. Look, I love David Fincher. I think he's absolutely great. I think Zodiac is wonderful, and that is very dense and, you know, very well researched. What Fincher does usually, you know, you can't fault Fincher for his meticulous research. He does the research, he deep dives, he kind of, you know, he could write a book probably with the amount of research that he's done before he makes a film. And Zodiac is kind of similar in the way that it's very dense, you know, it's like nearly 3 hours long, and it's very matter-of-factly, this happened, point, 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 and kind of, you know, lets you kind of make up your own mind towards the end of it. This is very much of the similar thing. It is so dense, but in the worst possible way, really. It's dense to the point where I found it really hard to kind of engage with it or kind of really break through in it at all. I found a lot of the time, I'm not going to lie, I was struggling to work out what was going on screen because they're talking and I'm just like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I don't understand. And maybe the argument to be made here, maybe, is for the reason why I didn't enjoy it as maybe as much as some other people. I mean, Robbie Collin, again, from The Telegraph, he loves it. He called it an all-timer. I mean, an all-timer
wow.
movie. Citizen
Robbie,
Kane.
What are you smoking, Robbie? What
I know.
Are you smoking?
First of all, he says, you know, the future's Warner Brothers. And then, yeah, and then this. Citizen Kane is an all-timer, that's for sure. This is, like, so far away from an all-timer. It's a kind of medium entry-level film for me because it is just so dense and I just struggled to work out what was going on. So maybe that's something to be said about me. Maybe I'm just not intelligent enough to appreciate Mank. But it was really comforting to find that a lot of people, including our good friend of the show, Hamish Calvert, felt exactly the same way. They found it hard to just kind of break through to it, break in and kind of work out what was going on. I just didn't find it entertaining at all, really. And I mean, I love films about films. Singing in the Rain is one of my favorite films of all time. And it'll be interesting to see how this does in the Oscars next year, because one, we don't know, you know, what the competition is going to be. And two, if there's anything we know about the Oscars, is they love films about films as well. I think it will definitely do really well in the Oscars. And if it does, if it wins Best Cinematography, fine. You know, the cinematography is brilliant and it does, you know, Fincher goes to great lengths to kind of capture that feel, the aesthetic of Citizen Kane and make it feel like a film of its time in the 1930s. So if he wins like a technical award, fine. Gary Oldman, fine. He's all right. He's pretty decent in it. Amanda Seyfried is brilliant. She is great. And,
well, I'm glad.
Know, she is worth probably the only thing I would probably say with while watching, other than the cinematography. She is great. And I really hope that she gets recognized come award season, because for me, she's the best thing about this film. Otherwise, I think if you're a fan of Fincher's work, it could go either way. He is a very interesting filmmaker in that he makes these very kind of, you know, these passion projects, which are very meticulously researched. But Zodiac was great because, you know, you were trying to guess who the killer was and it had that tension through it. This just bored me to death, to be honest. So be interesting to see if you are a Fincher fan, what you think of it. This isn't Gone Girl. This isn't a Seven. This certainly isn't The Social Network, or nor is it Zodiac. And I would probably rate it in my lower kind of Fincher films, to be perfectly honest. So yeah, it's about 2 hours plus. I found it a real kind of drudge to get through, to be honest, a slog to get through. I can't say I'll be happy if it wins Best Picture next year, but maybe I should revisit it at some point and see me if there was something I missed. Who knows?
Gary Oldman, you just need to put a fat suit on and get a cigar and you'll win that Oscar, okay? But this is just not good enough, mate.
I think he might be wearing a fat suit in it. Like, he's got a bit of a podge. He's not wearing, like, a proper fat suit. Maybe that's just him, though. Maybe he's just wearing a podge.
Maybe just let himself go a little bit, you
maybe,
know?
Maybe.
Gary, it's okay.
Maybe he read the script and just got depressed. I don't know. But, like, it's a real kind of slog to get through. So I'm gonna wait with bated breath to see how you feel about it. And even if you make it past the first half an hour, to be honest.
Oh, I'm really busy. I've got to tie some shoelaces, so I'm going to skip that one, okay? But yes, Mank is available on Netflix, and we'll be waiting with bated breath to see how it does in next year's Oscars. Moving on now, another film vying for Oscar Best Picture is Hillbilly Elegy. This is directed by Ron Howard and stars Amy Adams, Glenn Close, Gabriel Basso, and Hayley Bennett. And it's based on a book written by J.D. Vance, and it's from 2016. It's a memoir all about his life growing up in Ohio in a kind of a really poor, abusive family, dealing with an alcoholic mother. And it came at a time when kind of J.D. Vance ran as a Republican. It came at a time when Trump was being elected. And a lot of people associate the book with Trump supporters and voters. And basically, it's a story about his life growing up in this really abusive, hostile environment and trying to break out of the cycle of this addiction and this poverty and trying to make something for himself. The movie flashbacks from his childhood into when he's in his 20s. He's a Yale law student trained to be a lawyer. And basically, the movie looks at how he has to go back home and care for his family again. Here's a clip.
You may be right about some of what you said, but things haven't exactly worked out for your mama. And we can't let them take her license.
Why? It's her own stupid fault.
I know this ain't right, honey, but she's your mother. And maybe if we help her this one last time, she'll finally learn her lesson and keep her job.
But why can't we let her clean her own mess up for once?
'Cause family's the only thing that means a goddamn. You'll learn that.
That's a clip there from Hillbilly Elegy. Now, I've been so excited to talk about this movie with Joe because we saw this, it was released about 2 weeks ago on Netflix. And, you know, just from the bat, this film is gaining, you know, such polarizing reviews. Critics hate it. Audiences really like it. And if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes score, it has 26% critics, 81% audiences. And I do feel like sometimes we don't look at the audience score very much. And I'm included in that. I always look at the critic score and I don't really pay attention because I do think sometimes audiences are very generous with it. And I think, oh, I don't know. But I don't think we've seen a gap that big in such a long, long time. And I'm a fan of Ron Howard. And going into this, I had heard such horrible reviews. I mean, our good friend of the show, Chloe Slattery, really took this film to town. I mean, she did not leave it alive. It was dead on the floor by the end of the review. She didn't like it. Funnily enough, our other friend of the show, Hamish Culver, liked the film. I think, you know, it is a very, very polarizing film and a polarizing book that it's based on. And I think from what I've heard, people associate the film with working class white, you know, Middle Eastern, out in Texas, Alabama, Ohio, those areas, Trump supporters and voters, Republicans. And I think maybe that is what the book is about. I have not read the book. But for me, I really, really love this a lot. And the reason being is because, as you've seen for interviews with Ron Howard and Amy Adams and Glenn Close, they like have no idea. Like they went into this completely blind, I think, genuinely. I think Ron Howard adapted this not because he wanted to be a film about Republicans or Trump voters. He just wanted to make a drama about a young boy growing up in a really kind of poor working class family. And unfortunately, in 2020, you can't make those films anymore. You can't make a film about white working class families because people will say, well, no, you know, it needs to be more diverse or culturally diverse. And I'm sorry, I love those films. You know, I love films about, you know, different parts of the world. I love films that are culturally diverse. We're pushing for that. On this show, we review lots of films about LGBTQ, about, you know, black stories. We champion that. I think it's also okay to have films about white working class families too. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think if you're politicizing a film because of how you think or how you believe, regardless of the film itself. I don't think that's fair. And if you watch this and thought, oh, it's I didn't enjoy the film, absolutely fair enough too. Film is subjective. But I think we need to stop coming out of this mindset of politicizing films and pushing our agenda onto a film, even though I don't believe this film had any idea what it was stepping into, to be honest. I think the book is controversial. I think Ron Howard has adapted this as best as he could. I think the performances are stellar. I know Amy Adams is getting a lot of heat for her performance. She plays and portrays a very kind of aggressive alcoholic mother who is a nasty person, and there's no beating around it. And I thought she did that really, really well. There are some incredibly tense scenes in this, really tense, gritty. I was really, really stressed in a lot of these scenes. And it is an uncomfortable watch. It's not an enjoyable, feel-good film to watch for the holidays. But for me, I thought Glenn Close especially was just excellent. I really sympathized with her a lot. Again, not a nice character, but what I like about the film is these are characters that I think maybe you want to hate, but you end up kind of seeing through also. For me, I thought the film was adapted well. I thought Gabriel Basso as J.D. Vance in the film, I thought, again, he did a really kind of excellent job here. And I just sat there and watched this for 2 hours, and I just can't understand why people hate this film. Maybe it's something I've just completely missed. Maybe I'm not engaged enough in the politics of today. But I saw it as a really engrossing, powerful drama about family. That's all I saw it as. I didn't see any hints at Trump voters. I didn't see any kind of politicizing of, oh, well, this film's only for this demographic of people. Genuinely didn't see that. And if I missed it, I apologize. But for me, I found it incredibly engrossing. I was glued to the screen. I really couldn't pause it. Again, I'm not a big fan of episodic filmmaking, of going back and forth, flashbacks. I don't normally like that structure. And again, the film didn't need to do that. But again, it didn't really take away from the film for me. You've got stellar performances here. Will it be nominated for an Oscar? No, because Hollywood have decided that they just don't like this film. And that's fair enough. That's fair enough. But yeah, for me, I really like this a lot. And I'm sorry, I'm not giving in. I enjoyed it.
Nor should you. Nor should you. Because it is all subjective. It is all subjective. You're absolutely right. And you shouldn't feel bad for liking a particular movie, for sure. Maybe unless that film is The Human Centipede. I don't know. But anyway. I went into this and I cheered the hype, the controversy. All I saw, again, like I read Clarice's review, and I was kind of like, oh, well, this should be interesting. Let's see, if it kind of lives up to the controversy, that everybody's kind of been spouting on Twitter. When I watched it, I couldn't really pick up, like you, I couldn't really pick up on what was so controversial about it, other than the fact, like, as you rightly said, it is a film which is about, a white kind of lower class, middle class family dealing with, problems such as, drugs and alcohol and everything like that. So it does feel like a very kind of dated movie now. It feels like it should have been made in the 90s when Ron Howard was sort of at his peak. But other than that, I didn't really get the controversy. I then researched it afterwards, and you're absolutely right. I think the book is far more controversial than the film itself. And I think the writers deliberately kind of sidestepped some political points that J.D. Vance made in his book to avoid it from being overtly kind of controversial. I think they failed because it was controversial anyway, massively. But I think they did try their best to kind of, sidestep a few kind of real kind of talking points. For me, my biggest problem with it wasn't, the fact that it wasn't culturally diverse enough. Although, I will say that like you said, we're big supporters of Black stories and things like that. And I would much rather watch a Queen and Slim than this, because I've seen this film a million times before. And that's simply what it comes down to. I've seen this film a million times before. It didn't offer me any new sort of perspective. It didn't offer me any kind of revelations. And it should have been called Oscar Bait the Movie. Like, it is so Oscar baity. I mean, my favorite part, like I said to you before, was there's literally a moment where Glenn Close goes all out over a calculator. She
Can we do the scene? Can we do the scene, please? Please. Right, so you're Glenn Close and I'm the boy in the car. Ready?
Right, okay, go on.
I chuck the car. Oh.
You chuck it.
You chuck it.
That's me pulling over. And I look at you, deadpan serious, and I go, you go out there and you get that calculator. You go out there.
No,
And you get that calculator.
I don't want it. I'm sick of this. I don't want to do math no more.
You got to do math. You got to make something of yourself.
All right. I'll get it. I'll get the calculator.
And then, yeah, and then drive off. And then there's a moment like later on where she says she's, you know, he does good in math and she's kind of like she's there looking at her algebra. And she's going she's going over the top, like going all out trying to get that best supporting actress nomination for the Oscars. And she might get it. You don't know. She might get it. I mean, it might be, options may be very slim.
Yeah. It might be slim pickings.
Yeah, I mean, if Kathy Bates can get one for Richard Jewell, then who's to say? So anyway, yeah, for me, it didn't offend me. I didn't kind of find it offensive in the slightest. I felt like it didn't go dark enough for me. I think Ron Howard kind of wanted to still make it so that it appealed to a wider audience. He didn't want to go too dark. And if anything, I feel like it would have been better if he had gone darker and then maybe would have packed a real kind of emotional punch. But I think as it stands, it doesn't go dark enough so that when you get those moments, like with the algebra test and the calculator, they don't work because you're just like, I don't buy it. So Amy Adams, he's fine. She's great. If she wins an Oscar for it, I think there will be uproar because she's done far better performances. But yeah, I thought it. Look, it didn't offend me. I've seen it a million times before. It just was on the screen 1 minute. It was gone the next. I can't say I'll pay much attention to it. You know, I won't revisit it again. And Oscar season, we'll see where it stands. But, you know, I don't think it stands much of it. I think it got nominated, but I don't think it'll stand much of a chance of winning anything. But, yeah, it was there. That's the best I can say about it. It was made. Ron Howard is a good director. I will give him that. But it was made, and it was fine. And I did giggle at Glenn Close's algebra, the math and the calculator stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, Pythagoras would be proud of you, Glenn. He really, really would. You know, we all love a good algebra test. I know. I go inside, I get a glass of wine, I just get an algebra test down and I just stare at it. I think, you've done me proud, boy.
You've done me proud.
Boy? Yeah, yeah. But you know what? It's fun family. I would love to spend a week with them.
Christmas Day.
Oh, great. So I'd be like, hey, Glenn Close, how are you? You gotta make something up yourself, boy. But Glenn, I just brought an old bottle of wine. He's like, that's the wrong one. Anyway, that was Hilly Billy Elegy. Again, available on Netflix for you to enjoy.
This is Eleanor, the motherland's youngest trainee. All she wanted was to be a real fairy godmother.
Recite it with me, please.
A glittery gown turns a frown upside down.
Ooh. I know that I can do this. I'm gonna prove that people still need fairy godmothers.
I'm looking for Mackenzie Walsh.
Let's see what we can find.
Siri, search Mackenzie Walsh.
Okay, here's what I found.
Who said that? Is there a genie in there?
Don't answer that.
I'm looking for a sad little girl named Mackenzie Walsh.
That is me.
No, it can't be you. You're old. Have you seen yourself?
Security.
Me again?
I'm your fairy godmother.
Back off, lady.
Morning. Oh, good. You're awake, too. Is this your true love?
Not anymore.
Life isn't always a fairy tale. I came all this way to help you find your heart's desire.
You know what you need.
The makeover.
What? What have you done to my eyebrows?
Magic.
My house.
I know, right?
You turned my dog into a pig.
The spell got away from me. Oh, it's okay. He's just here to help with the housework.
I know you want to help, but
Life isn't as simple as happily ever after.
Fine. After all, 9 out of 10 fairy tales begin with once upon a time something amazing happened while she was drinking wine in her sweatpants. I've been trapped in the fairy tale when the real world is full of so much more.
You're starting to believe in magic, aren't you?
Are you sure I can't make you a ball gown before I go?
Hey, please wait. No, please don't. Oh, no. What the?
Nice dress. Is it new? Don't be mad. Don't be mad.
Moving on now to our last film of the show. And this is a little festive treat for you. This is Godmothered, playing on Disney Plus. And pretty simple story for this. This stars Gillian Bell, who we love, who's also been on a marathon. Joe, so maybe you can team up with her and do the concrete together. So Gillian Bell stars this. She plays a fairy godmother. She lives in a fairy kingdom in a different universe. And also, she's good friends with June Squibb. And there's a lot of June Squibb in this film, far more than we needed. But we're going to get to June Squibb later on. And June Squibb plays Agnes. She's like the DJ of this fairy godmother kingdom. And Gillian Bell plays Eleanor. She really, really believes in being a fairy godmother. However, they're just out of fashion. Nobody likes them anymore. I mean, and soon enough, they're going to be replaced by tooth fairies. And she can't accept this. So she decides to go and search for a letter that a young girl has sent her to age 10 years old. And this girl is played by Isla Fisher as a young girl. And she decides, you know what, I'm going to go into the universe. I'm going to go into America. I'm going to track this girl down. I'm going to prove to her that fairy godmothers do exist. However, when she gets there, Isla Fisher is not 10 years old anymore. She's 40 years old. She's a single mother of two. Her husband passed away. Life's not going too well for her. She's in this rundown news job that she doesn't enjoy. And hilarity ensues. So I watched this Monday night on Disney Plus. I sat down, not with a glass of wine, but with a nice coffee. First things first, can we just address the elephant in the room? This film wants to be Enchanted on every single level. For people who wanted Enchanted to, I think this is the closest you're going to get to it, because Amy Adams is too busy shouting at people. So she's not going to come back. So this is the best you're going to get. Gillian Bell. Yeah, I didn't know too much about this. This film, for me, dropped on Disney Plus. I didn't hear anything about it. I saw the cast, was interested. I really like Isla Fisher. I think she's really, really great. Married to Sacha Baron Cohen, of course. And first thing I want to say is, we talk about streaming. This film, I thought, was perfect for streaming. There's no way I would have liked to see this in cinemas. There's no way I would have got up and driven to a cinema and paid to see this, okay?
Well...
But for Disney Plus, okay, all right, all right. Fair enough. But yeah, I thought this was perfect home viewing for a Monday night. And again, it's not a Christmas film, but it is set at Christmas time if you want a bit of a festive treat. And I got this, I enjoyed this. I thought this was fine. Gillian Bell is very sweet. She's very charming in this role. She really commits herself to it. And we've just, again, like Joe said about Hilly Bilergi, we've just seen this done so many times before, where she turns up at Isla Fisher's work and she's like, I'm a fairy godmother. And she does really kind of silly things. She falls over and she talks to all the colleagues and embarrasses her. And she's like, you need your Prince Charming. It's very, very similar and in the same realm as Enchanted is. But I did think the cast do a really, really good job. And like I said, if you want something sweet, heartwarming to watch over the Christmas period, I think this will do it. You know, again, I thought Isla Fisher did a really nice job. There's a couple of laughs here. I wasn't really laughing too much. But again, it's feel-good, heartwarming, festive fun for you. But too much June Squibb. I mean, June Squibb is like a Rolls Royce. She only needs to be let out once a year. No more, okay? And she's just too much in this. It's almost like nobody asked for it, and Disney was just like, a bit more June Squibb? And everyone's like, no, no, please not. And here she comes again. So, June, we love you.
You
just need to be put it back in the garage now, okay, for next year. And you're going to come out and you're going to be amazing, okay? We love you, but just not all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I enjoyed this. I thought it was fine viewing for Disney Plus. But what did you think, Joe?
Yeah, I thought it was quite sweet, actually. And I recently watched Noelle as well, which dropped on Disney Plus for us. November. Obviously, it's been out for like a whole year over in America. So yeah, I watched Noelle recently, and again, you are right. I mean, this is trying to be, as you said, like Enchanted, and it's also trying to be a bit like Elf as well, obviously, because they've chosen the kind of Christmas setting as well. And Noelle was kind of doing that similar thing of like a fish out of water, kind of innocent, going into the big bad world and getting in all sorts of scrapes because, you know, they're so innocent and so lovely. And this is doing a similar thing. But what this has, which I struggled with getting through Noelle, this has a really great central performance from Gillian Bell, I've got to say. And charisma goes a long way in film because I think Gillian Bell is great. Brittany Runs the Marathon, which you mentioned there, absolutely brilliant. That was a film which came out of nowhere and just blew me away. And it was such like a heartfelt piece. And she was just so brilliant in that and just wore her heart on her sleeve that I was already impressed with her. And she does a great job of carrying this film on her shoulders. I mean, the reason people love Elf, you know, from back in the day is that Will Ferrell carried that film on his shoulders, and he did a great job with that film. And he had the charisma, and he managed to get that innocence across really naturally. And I think Gillian Bell does a great job of that here as well. So I think the two leads are brilliant. And I think that goes a long way for this film. You're absolutely right. June Squibb, I love you. You know, we saw you in Who Be Halloween. You wore a Boner Donor t-shirt and it was it was heaven. But
I was almost sick in my mouth, but yeah.
But here, it was such a night and day thing because I went from absolutely loving her in Who Be Halloween to absolutely just finding her so irritating.
Do you know what it was? It's basically Judi Dench in Artemis Fowl, isn't it, really?
It is. I mean, when you put it that way, you know, everybody has their moments. Even Judi Dench has her moments. So we can forgive you, June. But honestly, every time her little adorable face popped up from behind a banister or something, I felt like just turning the volume down and just like keeping it or whatever for a little bit, because it grated me. Her character properly grated me. I wish they'd been more of a kind of villainous role. They kind of set up this kind of head godmother to sort of become like a sort of villain. Maybe she had like the villain hairdo. And I thought, oh, like that'd be great if like she goes in and maybe there's more like of an antagonist to the film and more conflict. But that never really kind of happens. She just sort of shows up in the end and they have like a little moment on a stage. But I thought it was cutesy. I thought it was charming. And like you said, it sort of came from nowhere. I don't think Disney Plus have really plugged this a lot. And I think that's a shame because I think actually, you know, if you've got that subscription already and you are looking for that sort of festive fun, this goes a long way. And I think it's got its charms about it. So if anything, I probably enjoyed this the most out of Mank, Hillbilly Elegy, and then this. Wow. I probably enjoyed this the most. So maybe Oscars 2021, who knows?
Genuinely, who knows? I mean, there was no algebra test in this one, which I was disappointed with, but there we are. Yes, we love you, June. We love you, but no more Boner Donors for you, please. We've had enough. And yeah, again, that is available on Disney Plus as well. And that's all we've got time for on today's show. It has flown by. If you want to follow us on social media, you can follow us on Facebook under the Dan and Joe Film Show. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at DJ Film Show. Comment, share, like us. Let us know what you've been watching this week, whether it's at streaming or in cinemas. Either is acceptable. And also, you can listen to all our old shows. We're on Mixcloud. We're on Spotify. We're also on Apple Podcasts as well under the Dan and Joe Film Show. So be sure to check us out there. And very, very exciting. Speaking of kind of a festive Christmas theme now, we've got a big, exciting announcement. Joe, do you want to tell everybody what our next show is going to be?
Yeah, so this is actually our last sort of official show now for 2020. You know, you won't be getting many more reviews from us this year, it must be said. So this is our last official show of 2020, and it's been brilliant. But we do have two specials on their way. So we've got a Christmas special, which is going to be out on December the 18th. And we're not going to give too much away about our Christmas special, but we've got a brilliant guest list. We've got a lot of previous guests joining us guests on the show to talk about Christmas movies, and we're going to be drinking and playing games, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to get messy.
It's going to get very messy. And then if that wasn't enough, on the 28th of December, we've got our end of year, our official last show of 2020, which is just going to be me and Dan talking about our best and worst films of 2020. And I'm sure that's going to be very, very interesting listening as well. So that's the 18th of December for the Christmas special and the 28th for the New Year show as well.
I tell you what, I'm going to need a drink for both of those shows, I tell you what. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be so exciting. And I cannot believe the end of the year is almost upon us. So stay tuned for those episodes coming up. And we'll see you very, very soon. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.